welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Editorial cartoons have been a staple of the American political landscape since the country's founding, or perhaps more accurately, before its founding, with Ben Franklin's famous Join or Die illustration of 1754. And although they often make us laugh, especially if we agree with the message, political cartoons, the best ones that is, also make us think. Joining us now to talk about political cartoons is Ohio native Nick Anderson of the Houston Chronicle, among many other awards in 2005. Nick was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for editorial cartooning. Before joining the Houston Chronicle in 2006, he worked for the Courier-Journal in Louisville, Kentucky. He majored in political science at Ohio State University and was editorial cartoonist for The Lantern. In 1989, he won the Charles M. Schultz Award for Best College Cartoonist. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Nick Anderson will be speaking about editorial cartoons and elections tomorrow, Thursday, September 6th, at the OSU Alumni Association. For more information, go to ohiostatealumni.org. So, Nick, to understand Ben Franklin's Join or Die cartoon, you kind of have to know about the old wives' tale about snakes at the in back in the day. And I wondered how much it plays into what you do or what you assume your audience knows about the different topics.
That's a good question. Yeah, editorial cartoons, by their nature, you have to know something in order to get them most of the time. And it becomes, it's always a challenge. There's always a little bit of a tension between what I want to say and what I think people know about. And sometimes I might have to educate while I'm doing the cartoon, which means I have to do a multi-panel cartoon rather than a single-panel cartoon.
And it's so specific in its way, editorial cartooning. I wondered, let's go back in time and just how you decided to pursue it in the first place.
Well, I was probably 14 or 15 years old when I decided I wanted to be a cartoonist. And even younger, probably in sixth grade, I went out and bought a book on cartooning. And my father was a biochemist, and my older brothers seemed to want to go into management, and they sort of thought I was a little nutty that I wanted to be a cartoonist. But they humored me nonetheless, and then when I told my dad I wanted to be a political cartoonist, he laughed and laughed. he calculated the odds of getting a job as a political cartoonist, which I fortunately ignored. I wasn't very good at math, so I told him I was going to go ahead and then go for it. But he was supportive. What he did say, it was good advice, was get a degree in something you can use if that doesn't pan out. So I decided, well, political science at Ohio State would be a really good degree. Ohio State was a good choice for me because it has a big student newspaper, a good political science department. And if I wasn't able to reach my dream of being a cartoonist, I'd be well positioned to do something else in the real world. But fortunately, I've never had to do that.
My guest is Nick Anderson, Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist for the Houston Chronicle. Questions or comments for Nick, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. When you talk about cartoonist, did you think in terms of being an editorial cartoonist, or were you just into cartooning in general and sort of that took shape later on in life?
I was interested in cartooning pretty early on, probably fifth or sixth grade, mm-hmm. but it was political cartooning. I think I was looking for the comic strips, and I think just paging through the newspaper, I came across the political cartoons, probably freshman in high school, and I just was really blown away by the whole concept of getting across an opinion and an idea in a drawing. And I was inspired by Jeff McNally of the Chicago Tribune, a very famous conservative cartoonist, mm-hmm. and then many others of his day. Jeff had a beautiful drawing style, and I was just inspired to learn more about this. I wasn't particularly interested in politics at the time, but I became interested because I thought the medium was so exciting.
I wondered if you had strong opinions about politics and current events in general at the time, and if that was sort of your nature or not.
I really didn't. My father was a moderate Republican, and he didn't talk much about politics until I started doing political cartoons, and I would often do more because Reagan was president, and political cartoonists are often, criticizing the most obvious person to criticize, which is usually the president. And I started doing cartoons about Reagan, and he would laugh, and then he might argue a little bit, but he was supportive of the whole concept. He liked the idea that I was making him think and making other people think, and I was publishing him in my high school newspaper.
Do you like your cartoons? Because not everybody's are this created the same in terms of whether or not they make you chuckle or laugh. Do you like to make people laugh?
I never set out to make people laugh.
Okay.
I sort of fell into that trap okay. early on, and I found that I was just doing terrible cartoons.
I see. So the driving, it's to make a point.
Yeah, to make a point. And oftentimes people think they're funny. And occasionally I'll chuckle when I get an idea. But most of the time I don't, and other people find them amusing. But usually when you reveal some kind of truth in an unusual way, it can be funny. But I don't ever set out to do that. In fact, if I prefer to do something thoughtful and to do something where people say, oh, that's an interesting insight. I hadn't thought of it that way. I would much prefer to do that than to make people laugh.
So you describe yourself as an independent. Is there pressure for someone in your position to give equal time to both parties to prove that you're independent, especially during an election year? Do you get that?
Oh, relentlessly.
Yeah.
But I have to take that with a grain of salt because although I try to maintain some sense of independence from I don't want to be just a mouthpiece for one particular party, I can't help but find myself more alienated from one side or the other at any given time. During the 90s, I was pretty much giving equal time to both sides because I was pretty alienated from the Democratic Party, but I thought the Republicans were taking it way too far with impeachment. And in the 2000s, I became extremely disillusioned with the Republican Party and George Bush because they had promised to keep a check on government when they cut taxes, and instead they slashed taxes and started two wars and created a new prescription drug benefit and continued with deregulation, and I think it created a real problem. And I've sided more with the Democratic side recently for those reasons. And, well, I could go on, but I'll just be rambling.
Speaking of Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush and all the rest of them that have held, occupied the Oval Office, do you caricature them or are your drawings about people listening to them and not them talking specifically? Does that make sense? I don't know. I mean,
I'm not sure. I'm not certain.
Well, when you're talking about one of their policies, do you use them? Do you depict them in your comics, the presidents?
You mean former presidents?
Former or current?
Current, definitely. Former presidents, sometimes. I actually did a cartoon about Clinton for today's cartoon, but only because he's appearing at the Democratic National Convention. I didn't actually draw him. I drew a bunch of Democratic fans shrieking in excitement, which I think is ironic because Obama's in this very difficult situation because the economy, because of the financial crisis, which Clinton, I think, has some ownership of because he helped deregulate the financial industry and repeal the regulation that kept investment banking and traditional banking separate. So I think it's kind of ironic that people have forgotten this, and Clinton is having to kind of help save Obama, but it's partly of his making.
To what extent are your ideas ever driven by the Chronicle's editorial page editor or the editorial board, however they're configured?
We have discussions, and so I guess to that extent, my opinions are shaped by discussions that I might have with my colleagues or the meetings we go to. I come up with my own ideas, and they rarely, cartoons rarely get killed just because of the opinion. The only time that it might cause a problem is if I'm doing, too much on one particular topic, then the executive editor might kind of say, you need to take this in a different direction. But for the most part, it's not that they're telling me what to draw. I come up with my own ideas, and they might try to steer me in a slightly different direction. Or on rare occasions, they might kill a cartoon and say, we don't want to publish this, but it doesn't happen that often.
Do you go to the meetings when they discuss editorials and get ideas that way, or is that not really part of your routine?
It is part of my routine, although we've gotten out of that routine as an editorial board because we have a smaller staff, and I think because there's less time in the day, I think that the editor just goes around and does assignments and has individual discussions with people most days, although we do occasionally have the editorial meetings, which I do like.
Well, let's talk about some of your recent cartoons. The first one, and by the way, to our listeners, you can go to Ohio Channel on your television or go online to WOSU.org/allsides while we stream live to see these cartoons while we talk or just check out our archived version of the show later on. So, Nick Anderson, the first one I wanted to talk about is a 6-panel cartoon that refers to the recent reports about the county commissioner in Lubbock, Texas, who proposed a tax increase to prepare for civil war if President Obama is reelected. Lots of people around the country were just making light of his assertion that the president was preparing to hand over the keys to the country to the United Nations. In the first 3 panels of the cartoon, though, a regular guy is watching his flat screen. Listening to the television report as it laid out the commissioner's proposal. In the 4th panel, he's still watching and listening. In the 5th panel, he says, "This is astonishing." And in the 6th panel, he calls out to someone, presumably in another room, "A Republican proposed a tax increase." In other words, a completely different take on it. How did you come up with that?
As I was driving home, I read that story after I did my cartoon for the day. I read that story, and I thought, this is amazing. And as I was driving home, it suddenly occurred to me that what's even more astonishing about that is not kind of a nutty strain in the Republican Party, which I think there is right now, unfortunately. And it was almost sort of a two-pronged satirical take on this, in that it's even more astonishing that a Republican would propose a tax increase right now, because most of them have signed this pledge to Grover Norquist that they will never raise taxes. So I thought that was even more astonishing.
And that's the kind of thing. So when you present, do you just draw it up first or do a rough draft and show somebody? Or how does that work? Do you do a completely finished product before it's published?
No, I do a rough draft, and then I send it out. I'll have like an email list, then I send it to the executive editor and then my colleagues, and then I might walk around and talk to them and get feedback. And sometimes I'll do 2 or 3 sketches. Other times they'll say, this really isn't all that, you know, it's okay. And I might do one or two others if I feel like it's not that strong. But that one I did in the morning and came back unanimous as it was really a strong cartoon.
Everybody needs an editor, right?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, you're syndicated. When I was looking at your bio, it didn't say how far your reach is, though.
I think I'm in about 100 papers around the country.
I was wondering if you get different kind of feedback from different regions of the country about different cartoons.
I do. I get the electronic stuff is hard to tell where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. I get most of my feedback is on my blog. But I do get mail. I recently got one from Tampa, Florida last week. In fact, I don't know if it was anything related to the convention or not, but it was on a often people will take my cartoon and they'll scribble in their thoughts on it and send it to me. Oftentimes these are sent to me without a return address, and the one I got recently was addressed to Comrade Nick Anderson. And so I knew it would be good without even, you know, before I even opened it. And he didn't even bother to look up the address. So I posted it to Facebook, and somebody noted that they thought it was ironic that he had sent this through a government institution, the Postal Service, and criticizing my government, my love for government, presumably.
Well, some of your biggest fans probably hate you, sometimes they say.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of people who love to hate me, and I'm fine with that. I think the worst mistake I could make would be to be boring or to try to please everyone, which is just impossible for a political cartoonist.
My guest is Nick Anderson, Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist for the Houston Chronicle. He's going to be in town tomorrow. If you want to learn more about where and whether you can go to see him, you can go to the website ohiostatealumni.org. We'll be right back and talk about some more of his cartoons after this. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, we're in Charlotte talking with Democrats on the economy, delegates and big guns on jobs, and how they see an Obama second term. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 74 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly sunny skies for the rest of the day, a high of 88. Clouds for tonight with a slight chance of rain, a low of 68 degrees. Partly sunny, still a slight chance of rain on Thursday, and a high back up near 90. Support for 89.7 comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners, investment managers, providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life, at sherringtongroup.com. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Nick Anderson, Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist for the Houston Chronicle. He's an Ohio native and graduated from Ohio State University with a degree in political science, as it were. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about another cartoon. In the next one, it's a two-panel cartoon. The regular guy, I call him, is planted in front of his flat screen again with presumably his wife standing behind him. They're both watching a report about a spike in gas prices. And the guy says Obama's driving up energy prices again, repeating a common Republican criticism. In the second panel, the news report adds that the spike is partly due to a large refinery fire, to which the regular guy responds with a shocked, he's even resorting to arson. And by the way, in that, his wife is rolling her eyes in the second panel. Where did that come from, Nick?
Well, I think that presidents in general, no matter who it is, whether it's Bush or Obama, don't have a great deal of influence on current energy prices. They can have some influence on long-term energy prices. But even then, I think that this issue gets demagogued by both sides, and I think it was demagogued by the Democrats when they started going up under Bush. And what often happens is there's a lot of pandering, and people are saying, "Well, we need to go to the strategic oil reserves." And I think what gets lost in this is that oil is a global commodity. No matter how much we drill, if the demand goes up, you know, in China, its prices will still stay high because it's a global commodity. We do not have our own market in the United States. It's influenced by global factors. So I think that this is often used as a political football, and I look askance at most charges that the president, whoever it is the part of the problem.
What are some issues that you won't touch, or are there no issues that are...
I really can't think of any issues I won't touch. Even, you know, I suppose I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Even difficult issues, I will try to find a way to address them delicately if necessary.
And what are some of your favorite issues?
Economic issues are among my favorites. I guess because I have such strong opinions about where we are and how we got here. The problem is it can be difficult to communicate my sort of nuanced philosophy about this without in a what is a pretty blunt instrument in a cartoon. So you kind of have to figure it out by looking at them over time.
614-292-8513 if you want to make that call and talk with Nick Anderson, Pulitzer Prize winning cartoonist for the Houston Chronicle. The Chronicle's online version, it's getting or has already been redesigned, and you decided to start a new feature to your blog at the same time. It's called Another View, and it links readers to cartoons from around the country. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, I think that there's because I live, I'm in a conservative state, and I am relentlessly pounding Republicans right now, and I think that they, you know, they brought it on themselves largely. I think that the charge that Obama's a Marxist socialist, that he, you know, a lot of Republicans, something like a third, believe he was born in Kenya. I think that there's just almost a parallel universe we're operating in. But I do listen to the complaints that it's one-sided, and I think that I'm completely fine with people being exposed to more than one point of view. So I decided, well, I'll just do it right here. I'll link to other cartoons and people and others, especially other cartoonists who I think maybe aren't getting a lot of attention. And in fact, I linked to Nate Beeler this morning of the Columbus Dispatch, who I think is a really talented cartoonist.
Yeah, he'll be joining us later.
Oh, great.
Just a few minutes. We're going to meet him. He's new. He's new here, so he's a new guy in town. I thought that was kind of nice that you link to people who aren't getting as much attention, because it is a hard business to break into.
It absolutely is. So there are other cartoons, like there's a guy named Eric Ali I linked to last year. He's younger, very conservative cartoonist, very talented. So I try to avoid the real obvious ones, like Mike Ramirez, who's probably the most well-known conservative cartoonist, but he gets a lot of attention, and I think that there are a lot of others that haven't gotten so much. So trying to just point out some other good work, and I'm not going to exclusively point out cartoons that I disagree with. I linked to one last week that I thought was good that I really agreed with. So I'm not promising to always do ones that I disagree with. I just wanted to highlight some other work.
You recently decided to post part of an unfinished cartoon, and it was for a Sunday edition. The cartoon was intended, and it wasn't the whole drawing. Why did you do that?
I actually don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember the cartoon you're talking. I posted that unfinished cartoon.
Yeah, it was just sort of the first sketch or that kind of thing. And I wondered, is it because you get a lot of questions about how you do your work or what it looks like?
I do. I get that a lot, and I would, if I wasn't so rushed during the day trying to come up with, I'm always pushing myself to come up with the best idea, and then waiting to the last minute, and then drawing it as quickly as I possibly can. I would probably do this more often. Because I come up with more than one sketch most days, I would like to, rather than throw them away, post them. And also, I've wanted to show the entire process. I used to do that to some degree, where I would show like four different slides of the rough sketch, the more polished sketch. Each drawing goes through about four different versions. There's the rough sketch, then the more polished sketch, and then the line art, which is basically I trace over my own drawing in a more polished liner, and then I do a color version. So I have done that, but what I'd like to do is an animation of the entire process coming together, and I haven't figured out how to do that yet, but I don't think it's that difficult.
You've done animation, though.
I have done animation.
Yeah, I was looking at some of it.
I've done a lot of different takes on it. I used to work with, when I first got here, I worked with a 3D animator and with a complex program called Maya. And that was, they were really slick and polished, but they took months to produce. They were, I would write them, direct them, produce them, come up with the audio, and then he would do the animation, but they would take a long time, and my style got completely lost. And because it's 3D and my style is pretty scribbly, the style would get lost. So I experimented with some flash animation, working with a flash animator here on staff, and we did some pretty good work, and we could turn them around very quickly. But he moved on, and we no longer have someone on staff to do that. And rather than do it myself, which there are some people who do both, and it just seems like an enormous amount of work to try to do flash animation and cartoons. I started doing some claymations last year, and I had a lot of fun with that. And I'm probably going to try to come back to that. I've gotten away from it recently, but claymations are a lot of fun, and I was able to do them pretty quickly. I would be able to create them in like 1 to 2 days. So keep an eye out for maybe one more of those before the election.
Okay. By the way, there is a Nick Anderson does have a blog, and we'll post a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7. And once again, my guest is Nick Anderson, Pulitzer Prize winning cartoonist for the Houston Chronicle. He's a Ohio native, hails from Toledo, and an OSU graduate. Questions, 614-292-8513. We also have an email from Michael. He writes, I would like to know Mr. Anderson's viewpoint on the difference between, quote, political cartoonists, end quote, and cartoonists who represent a political view. For example, Michael Ramirez, who represents a right-wing viewpoint and seldom lampoons the Republicans, versus someone like McNally, who skewered politicians in general.
I hadn't ever thought of it in explicit terms like that. I think that that it's fair to point that out. I think McNally did lampoon both sides. I think he was much easier on Reagan. He really liked Reagan, and he didn't do a lot of cartoons critical of Reagan, but he was only because he agreed with him. It wasn't because he was unwilling to do so. And I think I'm in a similar situation now that I don't often do anti-Obama cartoons because I'm in general agreement with him, and I think he's been a pretty decent guy and doing the best he can with a very difficult situation. I did not have any reluctance doing that with Clinton. I was pretty hard on him. I think it just depends on it's a fair criticism whether or not somebody is being a mouthpiece for a party or whether you're just have a political philosophy and you're expressing it even-handedly, which I really try to do. And the reason that I'm not harder on Obama is he just lines up with my political philosophy pretty well. And I'm not going to comment on whether or not Ramirez is doing that or not. I just haven't studied any individual cartoonist well enough to know how consistent they are with their philosophy.
We have an email from Sarah. She writes, I have been to the cartoon library at OSU. It is interesting to me that so many cartoonists are from Ohio. Is there a reason? Just those Midwestern values needing a creative outlet?
I don't know. I know, I think Nate Beeler's from Ohio. Mm-hmm. And then Bill Watterson, the Calvin and Hobbes, the great, great cartoonist, was from Ohio.
Mike, is it Lukovich?
Is he from Ohio?
I thought he worked for the Cincinnati Enquirer.
He's at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Yeah, I don't know if he is from
Jim
Ohio.
Jim Borgman
though.
Was.
Borgman, that's it.
Yeah,
Borgman.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Yeah. He does zits and used to be a political cartoonist. I have no idea. Maybe we just have too much time on our hands in Ohio and start drawing a lot in order to fill the time. I have no idea. I think there is a little bit of that. And Ohio State turned out a lot of cartoonists. There were at one time three working political cartoonists from Ohio who had graduated from Ohio State. I'm the only one left, I think, as far as we've gone through a lot of layoffs.
Yeah, it's that business.
Yes.
Let's talk about another one of yours. It's a third one now that we'll talk about. It's one panel cartoon. You talk about the decision this summer to allow women members at the venerable Augusta National Golf Club, home of the Masters Golf Tournament. In the panel, a modern woman dressed in business attire is leaning against a sign, checking her watch. And the sign says, "Welcome to the 20th century," with a smaller arrow-shaped sign saying 21st century. That way, Kai, I guess, is the idea. And coming down the road is an antique-styled car with two old geezers is the only way I can describe them in their golf clubs. Hysterical. I don't know if you thought it was funny when you were doing it, but
I didn't think it was funny. That was one I sort of in the caption said golf cart. That was I thought of it. That was one that I sort of pulled together sort of cerebrally. I'm glad you found it funny because I didn't think I just sort of thought this one out intellectually and other people told me they thought it was funny, which is great. To me it's just astonishing that it took this long. And it's from what I understand, it was they kind of got backed into it because they had IBM as one of their sponsors, and IBM now has a CEO who's female, and they had always extended an invitation to the CEO of IBM. But this time they had to avoid it because she was a woman, and that put them in a very awkward spot. So it's just that alone, a woman who is a CEO and there's a golf club that doesn't allow women as members was just astonishing to me.
And really, you have to be pretty much of a big shot because it's Condoleezza Rice and one other woman who's a CEO of a big corporation. Mm-hmm. It's just they're not going to let anybody in.
Right.
I mean, it's practically impossible to attain those heights still. All right. In our last example of your work, you picture a caricature of Lance Armstrong, the great racer, lugging a ball and chain connected to a chain of his Livestrong bracelets attached to his wrist. And on the ball, it says doping. And I know you love mountain biking and cycling, and that in 1988, you cycled across the country. So I would imagine you've been a great admirer of Lance Armstrong, who recently gave up the fight to save his reputation. Not a happy panel.
No, that was it's painful for me to do that. It was painful for me to come to that conclusion. I was a huge admirer of his and found inspiration in his fight against cancer, as so many of us did. But I just came to the conclusion after reading and following this for years and seeing how many people were ready. ready to testify against him and told their stories, it's just really hard for me to conclude anything other than, yes, he did participate. And it's also, you know, he's a Texan. He lives in Austin. So on many levels, that was a difficult one to do. I did not get a lot of pushback on that one. I think most people have come to the same conclusion, unfortunately.
How well do you study an issue before commenting on it?
I feel a responsibility to really study an issue. I try not to go off half-cocked, which may come as a shock to many of my readers. But I actually really read up, and if I don't feel like I know enough to form an opinion, I'll just wait. There are times when there's a real hot topic, but if it's complicated, I might wait a day or two until I can carve out the time to really read up on it. And economic issues are often that way because they can be convoluted and complex. So I really do feel an obligation to do that.
When something hits, an issue hits, and you're thinking about it and you're studying up on it, but then by the time you figure out what you would have said, it's sort of, you know, stick a fork in it, the issue's done,
yes,
moving on. Does that frustrate you?
It does, especially if it's a hot topic and it's something everyone was laughing about last week and I think of a great idea, but it's too late. It's like, oh, shoot. It's very frustrating. A good example on the question you just asked me about studying up, I did a series of cartoons on energy last year, and I did one on fracking, and it ran the whole length of the page and then across the bottom, just like a fracking pipe, and it was multiple panel, and I had read like many, many different studies. It took me about 4 months worth of research because I live in one of the energy capitals of the country. I wanted to get it right, and I did more research on that single cartoon than anything I've ever done. Literally reading these studies, highlighting them, and citing them in my cartoon, and yet I still made a tiny error, and it was so frustrating. It was a small technical error, but we did have to run a correction about the funding source for one of the studies. The energy industry had funded a local Rice University energy forum, but they didn't actually fund the study I cited. So they were we had to run a correction. It was very frustrating.
That's daily journalism.
It is. It's my first one in my career, but most of the time I just deal with opinions, so I don't have to do that.
How many are you working on at a time?
Generally just one.
Okay.
There are times when but as soon as I start drawing one, I'm thinking about the next one, and mm-hmm. I'll have cable news. I watch all three cable news channels, not just one. And I'm just, you know, trying, and I'll have, I have two screens, and I'll have a split screen, and I'm working on one while I'm kind of like keep my eye on the news with the other, and this, you know, I'm just trying to turn ideas over all the time and listening to the radio and keeping an eye on the news at home and reading on my phone. So I'm just constantly trying to come up with the next idea.
Do you absolutely love the presidential election cycles?
Yeah, it's great. It's just so easy, it's, you know, especially when Clint Eastwood talks to an empty chair,
yes,
something like that. It's just it's just a gift. I only wish I could do one every day, but I can't. You know, I don't want to rely on the empty chair crutch every single day. But you can rely on a great deal of fodder, a great deal of dishonesty from candidates that you can call them out on. Hyperbole, personal attacks. It's never a dull moment.
Well, thanks for sharing this moment with us today.
You bet. It's been a pleasure.
Nick Anderson, Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist for the Houston Chronicle, Ohio native. He'll be in Columbus tomorrow. For more information, you can go to our website. We'll have a link there for you if you're interested in seeing him. Our website is wosu.org/allsides. When we return, we are going to meet Nate Beeler, the editorial cartoonist, the new editorial cartoonist for the Columbus Dispatch. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, a comparison of the Obama and Romney economic plans. We talk with David Leonhardt, Washington Bureau Chief of the New York Times. He won a Pulitzer Prize last year for his Times columns about the economy. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to join our station and WOSU-TV for live coverage of the Democratic National Convention. Tonight, WOSU Public Media brings you the latest from NPR and PBS. It's special coverage live from Charlotte tonight at 8 here on 89.7 NPR News, on WOSU-TV, and at WOSU.org/campaign2012. And be sure to join All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow and hear about the changing format of the Columbus Dispatch and the future of newspaper design. Dispatch editor Ben Marison joins the show. That's tomorrow in All Sides with Ann Fisher from 10 until noon on 89.7 NPR News. 74 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high near 90. Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, offering perspective in a time of economic uncertainty to help grow and maintain wealth. For more information, visit themontgomerysolution.com. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about the art of the editorial or political cartoon this hour. Joining us now is Columbus native Nate Beeler. He joined the staff of the Columbus Dispatch as the editorial cartoonist earlier this year. Before that, he was the cartoonist for the Washington Examiner for 7 years. He has won many regional and national awards for his work, including the Golden Spike Award from the Association of American Editorial Cartoonists in 2007. While studying journalism at American University, he won 3 major college cartooning awards, the Charles M. Schultz Award, the John Locher, I knew I would mispronounce it, Award, and first place in the SPJ Mark of Excellence Awards. So welcome to the show, Nate Beeler.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
Welcome back to Columbus.
Thank you.
I was wondering, is it as interesting fodder for your work as living in Washington or working in Washington?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Ohio politics are extremely rich, especially right now, given, you know, the presidential campaign going on. D.C. was very hard because I had to deal with 3 different jurisdictions of Maryland, Virginia, and D.C.
As far as your local issues went?
Right, as far as local issues. And also, any time I drew about Congress, it was sort of like a local cartoon. So it's I'm settling into Ohio politics here slowly. But so far, it's been pretty fun.
It helps that it's the eye of the storm most of the time,
exactly, right? And that was a big factor actually in coming here. I was looking forward to being in the swingy state of the swing states.
So, what for you was the lure of editorial cartooning over, say, what we find on the comics page?
Well, I think that I've always had a bit of a problem with authority figures telling me what I could and could not do, whether it was, you know, high school teacher telling me I can't draw on the desk, you know, when I'm supposed to be studying Spanish or math, or, my high school teacher for the school newspaper telling me, well, you know, maybe you should write an article this way. So I guess I have a bit of an independent streak in me there, and comic strips were fun, but I'm not a natural comedian, but I have an opinion.
It's funny. Of course, I was just talking to Nick Anderson from the Houston Chronicle, and he said he really doesn't think of his work as funny.
Right.
But he's
a very funny guy.
It's very funny. I mean, I laughed out loud at a lot of his work, and some of it is thoughtful and not funny, you know, like the Lance Armstrong one. Do you think of yourself as your work when you're thinking about what you're going to draw? Do you think, oh, yeah, that's going to be funny?
Oh, sure. I, as I said, I'm not a natural comedian.
Yeah.
And humor is sort of like a tool of the trade. It's not the purpose of drawing a cartoon. But, you know, I'll sometimes run across an idea that immediately gives me giggles. But most of the time, it's sort of like pulling teeth. You know, or finding that needle in the haystack. You're working really hard to get yourself through an idea to figure out the punchline.
We had an email from Michael earlier, and I talked about it with Nick, and I just wanted to run it by you, too. he said, I would like to know Mr. Anderson's viewpoint. I'd like to know yours on the difference between political cartoonists and cartoonists who represent a political view. For example, Michael Ramirez, who represents a right-wing viewpoint and seldom lampoons the Republicans, versus someone like McNally, who skewered politicians in general. I was wondering, do you agree that there are those two categories, and do you know if you fall into either one of them?
I think that there are cartoonists out there that tend to hew closer to party lines than others. I have always felt a general disdain towards all stripes of politicians, so I myself have tried to avoid that at all costs. But at the same time, you know, I'm a person, so I have opinions on issues, and that is the point of an editorial cartoon. So sometimes my cartoons will hew closer to Republicans than Democrats, and sometimes it'll be the opposite.
My guest is Nate Beeler. He's editorial cartoonist for the Columbus Dispatch. He's new in town. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, you came from 7 years with the Washington Times.
Examiner,
I'm sorry. And I was wondering what the differences in the newspapers and how they approach what you do.
Well, it's fairly similar. The big difference, of course, is in subject matter, because D.C. being the center of politics, I drew more on national politics than here at the Dispatch. And everybody who read the Examiner was very keyed into national politics. And here in Ohio, they're certainly keyed in, but there are issues of local import that are important to these readers. And the Dispatch has very, very good coverage on the local and state issues here. And frankly, you know, I would be making a mistake if I didn't cover this stuff, because it does impact our readers.
How do you, we were talking earlier, you know, there's some people are independents, you know, and I mentioned in the reference to Michael Ramirez in that email, he, according to the writer, represents a right-wing viewpoint. How do you describe the political lean of your cartoons? You know, there's some people who read the Dispatch who think it's always conservative, it's always going to be pro-Republican. How do you feel about that?
Well, for my cartoons, I was trained as a journalist, and so I feel like I have a duty as a journalist to come at an issue fairly objectively, and then come to a conclusion by reading multiple perspectives. And that's the whole point of journalism and reporting. You want to give different perspectives to the readers so they can make up their own minds. And so I'll read the left and I'll read the right, and I'll come to my own decision on a matter. And, you know, I certainly lean libertarian on things, and I think that's sort of the anti-authority streak that I have in me. And also, it's just from being in Washington for so long. I mean, I went to this college there, and it has a way of changing you. And especially when you get to see all this up close, you know, get inside the sausage factory of Washington, it generally... Well, in my experience, it's made me a lot more distrustful of all types of politicians.
At the Dispatch, do you go to the editorial board meetings? Do you get your ideas from there as well as other places? And do they ever dictate to you what they want in a cartoon?
No, I do go to editorial board meetings, and I look at them as a way to help shape my own thinking on the issues, and it's part of the research for each cartoon. I get to hear the opinion of the editorial writers and editors, and you know, I take that with the opinions that I got from articles and friends and family members, and it just all sort of goes into the stew pot inside your head, and you know, hopefully in the end you'll be able to come up with an idea.
Do you ever get an idea just being out and about and hearing people talk, overhearing people?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and there's no telling when an idea will hit. I mean, sometimes it'll just pop into your head when you're in the shower in the morning, or you'll have to slave through the day, banging your head against the wall, staring at a blank piece of paper, and then, you know, 5 minutes until you need to start drawing, something will just come to you.
Once again, my guest is Nate Beeler, editorial cartoonist for the Columbus Dispatch. If you have a question or comment for Nate, We welcome them. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Getting to your work process, you said when you have 5 minutes and you've got to start working, I was wondering from start to finish, once you'd put pen to paper, how long does it take usually to produce a typical panel or however they're created for the dispatch?
Well, it could take anywhere from an hour or two. But then there's also the coloring process. And, a fairly complex cartoon could take 3 hours to do. But that, the drawing is the easier part of the day. The hard part is figuring out what you're going to say on an issue and figuring out how to say it in a clever way that hasn't been done by somebody else.
Oh, we have a tweet from Joe. He asks, would you ever do a negative cartoon about OSU football? That is a sensitive subject around here. Joe, no kidding. Great question. Nate Buehler.
Well, I think that OSU is a great asset to the community, and there certainly are negative aspects to any organization that large. I'm sort of going to feel my way through this issue, Ohio State issues, as I go along here. And just like Ohio politics, I'm getting acquainted with everything here.
You'd mentioned your rebel streak. The libertarian maybe comes from that. But are there any sacred cows? I mean, is there anyone you're not going to ever, locally or nationally, you're never going to skewer?
Well, it depends on what people do. Never say never. The answer is no. It all depends on what politicians decide to say or organizations decide to do.
Do you always agree with the spin in your own cartoons? In other words, are some of them ever suggested to you and, you're just going to I was an editorial writer. So sometimes I wrote editorials I didn't necessarily agreed with, and I took pride in actually doing maybe even better job with those because I wanted to make sure that it was balanced for the purpose that it was to make a point.
Right, right.
Balanced in the way it was supposed to be.
Sure. I mean, the thing with an editorial cartoon, the way to think about it is that it's essentially like a visual column. And I've got my signature at the bottom of the cartoon. And it's if I don't believe what I'm saying in it, then there's no point in drawing it, really, for me. And it's not the opinion of the paper. It's my opinion. So, I wouldn't call it spin. I would call it my opinion.
When you decided to be an editorial cartoonist, how has it changed for you over time? In other words, is it more work now? Is it less work? Is it just as much work? How have you changed?
Well, when I first started out, I got my foot in the door as a copy editor and worked my way to doing page design and then was able to get a foothold in editorial cartooning. So when I first started, I was splitting my time between page design and copy editing and drawing cartoons.
On the side?
On the side and during the day.
Oh, okay.
So I was loaded up at the beginning. And over time, I think it's gotten a little bit harder. I was just talking with people today about this. It seems in politics nowadays is so divisive. Both sides have their own sets of facts, and it's really hard to wade through all of that spin. And that's my job. I need to crystallize it all into an opinion for myself, and put it into a cartoon in a clever way. And it's just very hard when there's two sets of facts being debated.
You have critics, I'm sure by now. Everybody does who puts their neck out there. How do you handle the critics and the complaints?
Well, nobody ever likes being criticized, but if you're signing your name to an opinion, you have to
unlike the rest of the editorial page, by the way.
Right. Well, mm-hmm. you have to develop a thick skin. And when I look at criticisms, I try to see their point of view, and I may not agree with it in the end, but I try to give everybody their fair shake.
I don't think the Dispatch, and I stand corrected gladly if it's untrue, but I don't think they've ever written a positive editorial about Barack Obama.
Oh, really?
It's possible that they've made nice remarks about him in editorials that they're going to turn around and slam him later on. But point being, it's not a supportive, editorially supportive of the present administration. Would that prevent you from doing a critical cartoon of Mitt Romney?
Well, it hasn't so far.
And a positive one about Barack Obama?
It's my opinion, so I don't think that they would prevent it.
So there's no pressure that way?
No. And the thing is, with Obama and criticisms of him in my cartoons and maybe editorially, is that he's a sitting president. And a sitting president is always going to catch more flack than, you know, his opponent. Mitt Romney, right now, is just a guy running for president. He's not in any position of power in terms of elected office. So he's important because he is the Republican candidate. But, you know, there's lots of other people on the presidential ballot who are, or not necessarily on the ballot, but certainly trying to run for president. And Barack Obama is the leader of the free world. So, of course, he is going to be the subject of more flack.
I was wondering, are there some that are more fun to draw than others? Do you have favorites over the years? Of course, they're all caricatures in their way of presidents that you enjoyed drawing more than others.
Well, I
would imagine Mitt Romney's kind of boring in a way. He's so square-jawed and...
Oh, he's a very
attractive
man.
White guy. Yeah, yeah, he's a good-looking guy, blah, blah, blah.
Well, so is Obama.
Yeah, but he's got those ears.
Right,
you know,
sure. The ears are a bit of a relic from the Bush years, too, though.
Right, right.
And in terms of caricatures, cartoonists really love drawing Bush with these big elf ears. And so they never really got over that when Barack Obama took office.
That's true.
Including myself.
So what have you ever had a favorite?
Well, I do enjoy drawing Barack Obama. Mitt Romney is hard, but I think I'm getting the hang of it a little bit. The person who's given me a lot of fits right now is John Kasich, and I haven't had a whole lot of opportunity to draw him so far. I'm sure I will as we go along here, but he's hard to caricature. He's got a sort of doughy face that's and no eyebrows. Cartoonists like eyebrows.
Yeah, anything that distinguishes, that
right.
can show expression.
Right. Exactly.
No eyebrows. I never thought of that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I have to check that out.
And also symmetry. That's the reason why Mitt Romney is hard. He's got
Is not good.
Symmetry is very bad.
You're okay. Right. Yeah.
You want those big bulbous noses going in, you know, in crazy directions and the flapping ears or, you know, crazy hair. Uh-huh. Jim Trafficking hair.
Yeah, Jim Trafficking hair.
Yeah.
Doesn't fit inside of a political button. Well, I want to thank you for joining us, Nate Beeler.
Well, thanks. It's very nice to be here.
Nate Beeler, he's editorial cartoonist for the Columbus Dispatch. We'll have a link to his work on our website at WOSU.org. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook and follow the show on Twitter at WOSU All Sides. You can follow me, Ann, on Twitter, too, at Ann Fisher, WOSU. Want to thank our staff today. The All Sides staff includes Associate Producer Amy Jurovich, All Sides Assistant Producer Corinne Gleckler, All Sides Production Assistants Katie Higgins and Leticia Wiggins, All Sides Volunteer Rose Joe, with video production by Rich and Amber Karsmitsky. Thanks a lot, Rich. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Thanks for listening. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.